This is Digital Story Podcast number 913, September 19th, 2023. Today's theme is two new cameras that you should know about. I'm Derek Story. Maybe it was the unveiling of the titanium iPhone 15 Pro Max that cast a shadow over two excellent cameras announced just days before. But we're going to shine a light on them both. One from Panasonic, the other from Fujifilm, both terrific. Learn more about them on the first story of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So the first camera I'm going to talk about is the Panasonic Lumix G9 Mark II. It's been 5 years since the first G9, a little bit over 5 years actually. And this is a follow-up to it. Its big top headliner is that it includes phase detection autofocus. In fact, it's the first ever Lumix Micro Four Thirds camera to include phase detection autofocus, but there's a lot of other stuff going for it. This is the flagship Micro Four Thirds camera from Panasonic, and it's great to see another heavyweight enter the Micro Four Thirds space. Now, Panasonic redesigned the body. It has a more upright, angular appearance, and there's lots of tech inside. So first, let's take a look at what's going on underneath the hood, and then we'll see how it compares with its natural rival, which is the OM System OM1. But let's start out with what it has going for it. So there's plenty of resolution for a Micro Four Thirds camera, 25.2 Live MOS Micro Four Thirds sensor. Now that's comparing to the 20 megapixel sensor on the OM1. So it's got some resolution happening under the hood there. And as a result, because of its built-in image stabilization system, it can do 100 megapixel handheld high res mode. Okay, pretty impressive out of the gate. Has a 3.68 million dot OLED EVF, and it has a 60 frames per second or 120 frames per second changeable refresh rate. Good to see that 120 in there, because 60 is not quite fast enough for an electronic viewfinder, not these days anyway. Now here's where we get to its headliner feature. Has a 779-point phase detection AF system. Now when it comes to autofocus, you know, dependability is so important, right? And I talked about that a few shows back, how we need a camera that has really dependable autofocus for people like me to trust the autofocus, right? Because as soon as you get burned on a shot that you really need, then you want to go back and go, okay, I'm just going to go to single point. I'm going to lock it in and I'm going to recompose, you know, that whole thing. It really has to be good, the autofocus, to build that trust so that you will use it. Now, the phase detection in this camera allows photographers to track a subject in many different situations with great reliability and accuracy. This is something that I think sports photographers, action photographers, but even event photographers are going to truly appreciate. Okay, it has two card slots, and they're both UHS-II. Has the usual Wi-Fi and Bluetooth upgrades. Now, let's talk about the image stabilization for a minute, because it has what Panasonic calls dual IS-II. Okay, this is an updated spec here. And it combines the camera's 8-stop rated 5-axis sensor shift image stabilization. Wow, that's a... it's a bit of a mouthful there, with lens-based 2-axis image stabilization, and it compensates for all sorts of stuff. So that is a lot of image stabilization going on. Now, if you want to use dual IS-II, you need a compatible Lumix lens featuring, you know, their O.I.S system. Let's see here. Let's take a look at that LCD. It's a 3-inch, 1.84 million dot free angle touchscreen. In other words, you can flip it all around, use it for video, that kind of stuff. On the ISO, 25,600. Very nice. It has 75 frames per second continuous shooting. Of course, that's with electronic shutter. Mechanical shutter would start smoking at that rate and just sort of catch on fire probably. But it can do up to 14 frames per second with that mechanical shutter. It has a weather sealed design, but they're really kind of vague about how weather sealed it really is. My sense of it is that it's not as weather resistant as the OM-1. They say it's splash proof, and I never really know what that means, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't mean I want to be standing in a torrential rainstorm with it. Okay, so we'll go a splash proof design. It has all sorts of recently developed, according to them, pre-programmed settings. And one of them is, that's very intriguing to me, is that the G9-2 features the Leica monochrome photo style. So, you know, they have a kind of a partnership going with Leica to be able to use that Leica monochrome photo style in the G9-2. I have to tell you, that is one of the most intriguing features for me in this camera. I mean, the other stuff's great, the autofocus and the increased resolution and stuff, that's fine. But, ooh, Leica monochrome photo style, that's fun. That's fun. I would love to test that. I would love to test that. Now, it has a USB Type-C port, and you can use that for fast file transfers and fast in-camera battery charging. And you're going to need it to be fast because they don't include an external battery charger with the camera. So in the beginning, until you buy some accessories and so forth, you'll be charging that in camera via the USB-C port. Okay, so how does this camera that has tons of spec, how does that compare to the OM-1? Well, it compares quite well. There's some pros, there's some cons. Let's start out with where it falls a little short. So the sensor isn't quite as fast. The sensor in the G9 isn't quite as fast as the stacked CMOS variety that's in the OM-1. It has fewer subject detection modes, and the OM-1's really good at subject detection, birds and motorcycles and boats and so forth. The electronic viewfinder resolution is actually quite a bit lower. It's 3.68 million dots versus 5.76 million dots in the OM-1. The battery doesn't last as long in the G9-2. 390 shots versus 520 in the OM-1. It does weigh more, 23 ounces versus 21 ounces. And it's just a bigger camera. The form factor is bigger than the OM-1. And it's especially taller than the OM-1. That's where I really notice the difference. On the plus side, the G9-2 does have more resolution, 25 megapixels versus 20. It costs $100 less. If you're going off suggested manufacturer, it's actually $300 less. But right now, the OM-1 is selling for $1,999. It's been $200 off for some time. So that makes it only $100 different from the G9-2. And there are a few more video goodies on the G9-2. In fact, it's an excellent video camera as well. Now, Panasonic positions it as a stills camera primarily, but Panasonic being Panasonic, they just can't help themselves. And it's an outstanding video camera as well with tons of video specs. So what's the bottom line for this camera? Well, first of all, isn't it great that Panasonic continues to build sophisticated, well-designed Micro Four Thirds cameras? It really enriches the whole, ecosystem for Micro Four Thirds. You know, photographers, they love having a choice between two brands, two different approaches to photography, two different body designs, all that kind of stuff. And so the system is just far more vibrant when Panasonic is making and selling cameras such as the G9-2. So I love that part of it. And it's an excellent camera. It's handsome as well. I think it's very nice looking. It looks like a mini of their, you know, their S series of the full frames. It looks like a mini full frame Panasonic, which is kind of cute. And some may actually prefer the bigger size camera. Obviously, some are going to prefer, you know, having a bit more resolution. And if that's the case, and if you just like Panasonic cameras in general, I'm pretty confident that you're going to enjoy shooting with this flagship Micro Four Thirds camera from them. So you can pre-order it right now. It begins shipping in early November, and I think Panasonic has done an excellent job with the G9 Mark II. Now, the second camera that was announced and then overshadowed by the iPhone Titanium was the Fujifilm GFX 100 Mark II medium format camera. So we have a brand new Micro Four Thirds camera from Panasonic, and now we have a brand new and a really hot medium format camera from Fujifilm. And this is the third in the line of the 100 series. And it's going to be priced at $7,499 brand new. And it's a redesign as well. It just looks different. And again, I just think Fujifilm did a great job with this. Much in the same way that I like the Panasonic G9 Mark II. It's angular and upright, and it just has a very handsome appearance. Both cameras are really stunners, quite good lookers. Let's get into some of the details of the GFX 100 Mark II. So it has 102 megapixel, 43 by 32, actually 43 by 33 BSI CMOS sensor. That is a whopping sensor with lots of megapixels. The electronic viewfinder has 9.44 million dots of resolution. That is super nice. It has built-in 5-axis sensor shift image stabilization that almost feels like a tongue twister. And it has 8 stops. Okay, so 8 stops of IS. Very nice. I mean, can you imagine the mechanism that's moving this giant sensor around to get 8 stops of image stabilization? I mean, it's one thing to move a little Micro Four Thirds sensor around, but to move this giant 43 by 32 millimeter medium format sensor and get 8 stops, that's good. I'm impressed. The ISO goes from ISO 80 to 12,800. And up to 8 frames per second shooting, which is pretty speedy for a medium format camera. 3.2 inch, 2.36 million dot tilting touchscreen LCD. Fujifilm talks about in their copy for this, the improved autofocus algorithms and updated tracking ensures that your subject stays locked in focus regardless of their movements. Plus, it has subject tracking for animal, bird, automobile, motorcycle, bike, airplane, and train. So it's got some smarts under the hood too. A little computational photography going on there. One of the cool features that they have, and because this is a strong video camera as well, in fact, a lot of the improvements were on the video side. I tend to talk more about still photography because, quite honestly, I'm not a videographer and I don't know as much about video. But the video specs on this camera are extremely strong, and Fujifilm's positioning it for video. And one of the nice things that go along with that is that it can deliver photos or videos straight to the cloud moments after they're created, with the camera's first accessory-free integration for frame.io camera to cloud. Utilize the camera's built-in Wi-Fi or Ethernet local area network connection to connect to frame.io and deliver high-res RAW or JPEG images, send H.264 video proxies, or upload 8K ProRes video securely for review. Built in, no accessory required. That's pretty impressive, I have to say. We also get a new film simulation mode, and those of us who love shooting Fuji love the film simulation modes. And this one sounds pretty cool. The Reala Ace film simulation mode, a recreation of one of Fujifilm's most lifelike film stocks. It's similar to Provia, but with slightly lower saturation and slightly lower contrast. If you like that little bit more realistic look, and I used to shoot Reala film, I liked it a lot. Of course, I like Provia a lot too. So, you know, they're both really good. But instead of having to take one roll of film out and put another one in, now all you have to do is make a change in the menu. I get as excited about this as I did the Leica monochrome in the Panasonic G9 Mark II. So anyway, Reala Ace film simulation mode, direct record to SSD. Again, really nice for video shooters, but also very nice for RAW shooters as well. You can direct record to an SSD. Let's see, what else we got here? So the biggest improvements compared to other Fujifilm 100 models is better stabilization, up to 8 EV, faster burst rate, 8 frames per second, higher viewfinder resolution, 9.44 million dots, higher movie resolution, 8K UHD. It is truly video-centric. And the addition of a full-size HDMI port, the ability to capture ProRes 422 footage, the option to output direct to SSD, the inclusion of Vectroscope and waveform displays all point to Fujifilm devoting a lot of time and effort to deliver a camera that video creatives will take to easily. This is a heck of a camera, $7,500. You can pre-order the Fujifilm GFX 102 medium format camera now. It should begin shipping later this month. And I have links to all of this joy and fun and goodness in the show notes. So there's something for those of us who shoot Micro Four Thirds. There's something for those who shoot medium format. And later in the show, I have another little bonus camera as well. All right, let's go to the next story. A brief history of Olympus from the 6 to the OM Digital. And you can read this entire article on petapixel.com. This is a cool article. I love these historical look backs. And this is a good one. I'll read you the first paragraph and then you can click on the link in the show notes and go read the entire article and look at the pictures too. The pictures are fun. As the history of this storied brand enters a new era, under new ownership and now bearing the banner of OM Digital Solutions, let's take a trip back in time to explore its origins, successes, and milestone camera designs that will forever be associated with the Olympus name. And that's exactly what they do. They take you on a trip back in time, lots of pictures, lots of good information. Those of you who are fans of the Olympus brand, I think will really enjoy this article. It's on petapixel.com, and there's a link in the show notes. Speaking of OM system, they announced the new Tough TG7 adventure camera. And you can read this entire article on fstoppers.com. Now, it's interesting. I have read, at least 3 or 4 articles about the new Olympus Tough TG7. And I've also heard some comments from our community about it. And some of the comments were like, well, there wasn't really that much of an improvement with this camera. And at first I was thinking, well, you know, they updated the port to USB-C and things like that and called it a day. So then I started digging deeper, and I don't think that's entirely accurate. I think this update has more than a lot of people initially realize. And so I found this article on F-Stoppers, and I feel like they dug a little deeper or understand this release a little bit better. So I'm going to read you a few paragraphs from their review, and then I'll talk a little bit more about it. Historically, the Olympus Tough cameras were well respected by outdoor adventurers, divers, and those who work in extreme environments. The new OM System Tough TG7 has taken a huge step forward with a host of exciting new features. The camera is shockproof, designed to withstand being dropped from 2.1 meters, 7 feet, and it is waterproof up to 15 meters, which is almost 50 feet. And if you want to go deeper, the PT-059 case allows it to be used up to a depth of 147 feet. With these specifications, this camera will appeal to divers, snorkelers, wild swimmers, sailors, surfers, and other water sport enthusiasts. There are 5 underwater shooting modes that optimize settings for various scenes: underwater wide, underwater snapshot, underwater macro, underwater microscope, and underwater HDR. As divers know, the blueness of the scene increases with depth. Consequently, the white balance modes automatically adjust based on the underwater shooting mode. Although manual adjustments are also possible, these white balance modes are underwater shallow, underwater mid-range, and then underwater deep. That is really nice. I can tell you right now, just being able to set it to, in my case, it's going to be shallow because I'm a snorkeler most of the time. I rarely get to mid-range. But just having these underwater white balance presets, I think, are pretty cool. And I'm also very intrigued by underwater microscope as well. All right, back to the article here. Many owners of the previous Tough models have used them for macro photography. This camera takes it further with its microscope control mode. That is for close-up shooting where one can get within 1 centimeter of the subject. That allows users to switch between 1x, 2x, and 4x magnifications with the single touch of a button, mimicking the experience of using a microscope to observe and photograph subjects. On top of that, the rear LCD monitor allows for subject magnification of up to 44.4 times. Furthermore, the camera has focus stacking from 3 up to 10 shots and focus bracketing up to 30 shots. By using focus bracketing, the photographer can blend them into a single frame with a wide depth of field using the OM Workspace software. There are also 2 optional lens accessories that will allow even more possibilities for macro mode. Inherited from the OM system interchangeable lens cameras, such as the OM-1 and the OM-5, another feature included in this camera is Pro Capture mode. This facility is unique to the OM system and buffers shots for a 0.5 seconds before the shutter is fully depressed. This means you should never miss the action because of your reaction time. The camera has a USB-C socket, so the battery can be charged from within the camera. So for those articles that were saying there isn't a whole lot going on with the TG7, my sense is that there is. And looking back at the previous models compared to this one, I think this is a pretty exciting camera. Now, for me in particular, this is very exciting because I have a TG4. And I have to tell you, my TG4 has that old Olympus socket. You know, that funky one that was proprietary that they used for years. I hate that. I have to carry a cord just for that camera, you know, because you know, no other cord works with it. So for me, the fact that the TG7 went to USB-C, that alone, you know, pretty much has me leaning in that direction. But I'm really excited about some of these other features, like Pro Capture mode on your bang around camera. That's pretty nice. Focus bracketing, focus stacking, that's really nice. I mean, these are great, you know, these are great tools to have in a little camera that fits in your board shorts. And then, of course, you know, the microscope mode, which I love to play with and see how that works. This is a camera that a lot of us who have one just already love. I think this is a good update, and especially if your TG is a few models old, such as mine with the TG4. The only thing about it is it's $549, whereas you can get the previous model, I believe, around $499, probably $469 now. So the new model is going to cost you $100 more. I think it's a heck of a camera for $549. I have a link to it in the show notes. It begins shipping soon. All right, a little virtual camera club news. I'm going to start with the Nimble Photographer newsletter. And the reason why is because last week was a perfect example of why this newsletter is important for our overall coverage of the photography community. So the iPhone 15 Pro and Pro Max and the iPhone 15 in general were announced on Tuesday. Okay, the podcast was already recorded on Monday. So I wasn't going to cover it in the podcast. And then I wanted to talk about these other cameras this week. So I didn't cover the iPhone 15 this week either. But guess where I covered it? In the Nimble Photographer newsletter. And it's a nice little article that talks about the features I like in the iPhone 15 Pro Max. I think for photographers and for me, you know, that phone, the iPhone is my backup camera. The Pro Max is definitely the way to go. And I talk about the features that it has that is pushing me in that direction. Now, I'm upgrading from an iPhone 12 Pro Max. So this is a very nice upgrade for me. I've got the TG4. I've got the iPhone 12. You'd think I've been under a rock the last few years. But, I mean, these devices are good and they last and I keep using them. And the cool thing about it is I can trade in my iPhone 12 Pro Max for $450, which helps offset the price of the brand new iPhone. Not a bad deal. I mean, I've gotten great use out of it. It's in wonderful shape. Use it for 3 years and then get $450 for it. I feel pretty good about that. So anyway, that is covered in the newsletter. And then I also talk about the history and the saving of Nik software in the newsletter. So that's why I like the newsletter, because, you know, that news fell in between the two podcasts and that allowed me to talk about different stuff in the podcast. So if you're interested in getting this newsletter, it's free, just shows up every Thursday. Just go to nimblephotographer.com. There's a link there. Go to The Digital Story. There's a link there. Or just go to Substack and look up The Nimble Photographer. It's there as well. And that way you will be totally up to speed every week between the podcast and the newsletter. I want to give a shout out to the Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this community, this podcast, month in and month out. So our photo challenge this month for the Inner Circle members is really fun. In the pictures are starting to roll in. I just posted the photo challenge, but I'm asking them to choose their favorite camera and do a portrait of their favorite camera and then say why it's their favorite camera. So, you know, I like gear. I mean, this whole podcast is about gear this week. I talk about technique and other things too, but this week we're talking about gear. And I just think it's fun to see what people's favorite cameras are and then how they photograph them. So that's this month's photo challenge, and it's already off to a great start. And I know this is just the kind of stuff that we do on the Inner Circle space. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. Nose around a bit, sign up. And then you too can join us, support this community and this podcast in 2023. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. And finally, Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. The folks that provide us with everything we need for great inkjet printing to make those beautiful enlargements that we can hang on the wall, those fine art cards that we can share with friends and family. Just all the beautiful things that you can do with your inkjet printer. You know, one of the things that I like in fine art cards, I talk about them a lot, and most people think of the 5x7 fine art cards, which is the standard size. But Red River Paper also has square fine art cards, and they have the square envelopes to go with them. They have this coolness factor that I just really like a lot. And again, this is the kind of stuff that you just don't see other places. Yeah, you can see the standard stuff. You can see 5x7, 8.5x11, 13x19. But square fine art greeting cards with matching envelopes in a variety of surfaces. This is the kind of cool stuff that I really like. And they have templates for you to print them. If you're interested in doing some creative stuff with your inkjet printer and making some art that you can share with others, click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Nose around a bit, get some cool supplies, and make some beautiful artwork. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this community. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more cool stuff for next week. Until then, do a little window shopping, have some fun, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.